Institute. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by Johnstone Fine Foods. Buy premium Irish dry-aged beef at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to another episode of Dishing It Out with me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And me, Gareth Mullins.
And coming up on today's show, our usual culinary conundrums, we have the man, the myth, the legend himself, Mario Rosenstock, popping in for the chats. Great guy, Mario.
Who knows who he'll bring?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows who he'll be chatting about? Yeah, I hope he brings a bit of Keno with him or Michael D. I've been doing Sunday roast with Mario, you know, for a long, long time when he had his own Sunday morning show, and we got to know each other extremely well. But he'd often break into character, and I'm sure Ed, you always used to be in there too.
I record his podcast, and I often feel sorry for the guest.
Yeah,
they're not expecting it.
No,
and he has a really
his whole demeanor changes, and
he transforms.
He goes into Michael D. He stands right up. He's looking right at you. You're hopping, laughing, and you're like, at some point now, I need to breathe, and I'm on live radio. Yeah, so Mario's coming up on the show. Jeez, we've been racking them up lately, man. Huh? Some great guests this season.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah. As always, big thanks to our sponsors, Johnstone Beef. The boxes are flying around the country. Johnny is over the moon, delighted. I've yet to cook a video or do one. I promise it's on the way.
Don't worry. I've kept the commercial side of things rolling along.
Yeah, only for Gareth, I'd be cycling to the K Club every day. There'd be no juice
in the car.
No juice in the car. Yeah. All right. Don't go anywhere.
Okay, so we had something that I don't think we've spoken about before, but she was in with me, Margaret Jeffers from Good Food Ireland, and I believe you're doing the awards dinner, right?
Cooking the awards dinner this year, yeah.
She stayed in with us there last week, and she was telling me, coincidentally,
she was leaving you to come over to me.
Yeah, she says, I'm going down to your partner in crime, and I says, who, what? And do you know when you're just not thinking that way? She says, I'm on my way to the K Club, and I was like, oh shit, you're going down to see Gary. And then she told me you're doing it. It was a lunch last year, but it's a dinner this year, I believe.
Yeah, it's a dinner this year, yeah.
So you'll be cooking for me now in a few weeks. And as I said to you, if you need me to throw me whites in the bag, no problem.
I wouldn't let you anywhere near the kitchen. Come on, now.
When you're in the cacker now and one of the commies cut themselves and you need someone to carve the meat.
Don't worry, I'll have a few extra jackets for me that day. Yeah, so about 300 of the finest.
Pressure there, though.
300 of the finest chefs and restaurateurs in Ireland, yeah. So I have the menu pretty much written, yeah, and I just need to run it by the big boss Paul now. Like we've had a good conversation about it already.
You do a tasting for that or no?
I'm probably do a wee tasting for Paul, where it ends. Like, I mean, that's usually how it works, you know. Like, so when I'm happy and Paul's happy, then that's generally it, you know. But no, we're looking forward to it. Very proud to be having the Good Food Ireland Awards at the K Club. I think it's a really nice thing to be able to host, and
sure,
we have a big enough suite that we can carry that, no problem. And look, it brings a lot of pressure, but it also brings a great opportunity for people to see the journey of the K Club. You know, I wasn't there last year, and Philip was there, and Frank, a lot of friends. I was in France, I couldn't go. But everybody had a great time, you know what I mean? So now it's a further year on, and I'm there now since the start of the year almost.
How's it going?
Brilliant. Yeah, really good. Like, I mean, I can feel the weight of the summer season coming off. And saying that, it is extremely, extremely busy. Like, we have a lot of big business. There's some business I can't really talk about, but really exciting business that's coming our way now this year as well, and hopefully a bit more of it. It's September again. You would think, you know, it all start to ease down. Like, it was probably the busiest, I think it was the second busiest month of the year, and that's saying something, because, you know, it was looking like May was the biggest month of the year, and then June outdone that, then July outdone June, you know what I mean, and then September outdone them all. It's incredible, you know, like, but already I've been deep into Halloween. I have a fashionista, a fashion afternoon tea that we put away. Fernando, my pastry chef, the guy is just an unbelievable talent, and we did that. I have Scooby-Doo as our theme for Halloween. Bookings are 2-3-fold higher than what they were last year. It's really, really amazing, like how well it's going, you know what I mean? And I suppose since Paul went in there 4 or 5 years ago, like he's been trying to bring it on a journey and push it on all the time. And, you know, I got to stay there when I was being interviewed by Paul and going through the whole process. And like, I was just blown away by the place. You know, like I really, I wanted the job, but when I stayed, I fell in love with the place all over again, you know what I mean? And I've stayed a few nights over the year, like maybe some late events, and I was back in early the next day, and they're kind enough I could stay on the odd time if I needed to, and I did. But yeah, it's in a great place, you know what I mean? And only getting better. So this is another milestone event for us now to have the Good Food Ireland Awards, and you know, the likes of you coming and all our peers going to be there in the room that night. Like, so it'll be nervous, but good nerves, Gareth.
Yeah,
looking forward to it, yeah.
And Camir, also the podcast is getting a bit of love off the Irish Food Writers Awards.
I believe we're shortlisted as a finalist. Is
that
right, Ed?
They made the old nominations list, yeah. And the first on the list, literally.
When is that?
God,
I think it's out in it's November, I think. Because
is there a party though, like
there'd be something. Yeah, do you know, I normally they run a little competition with one of the colleges, and I normally judge it for them. So, and I'm nearly sure that does be in and around the Halloween time. So it's in the around the end of October, and it has to be wrapped up for the awards, which I'm nearly sure in November. So we'll have to dust out the old. Well, I know you'll be
nice to be nominated, doesn't it?
He'd be dusting out a three-piece if you like Conor McGregor coming into the
three-piece man all the way.
I'm going for the five-piece.
I'm gonna get what?
Five-piece.
I'm gonna get myself a new shell tracksuit style. Yeah.
Now, what's a five-piece suit? Yeah,
I have no idea. I'm gonna find it. It's two extra pieces. I'll need it after the dinner, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, we're going anyway, wherever the
party is. Of course
there'll
we're going.
There'll be a wee leave request going in for that night.
Yeah, for sure.
Boom, boom. Now, looking forward to that. It'll be good to...
That's nice to get a bit of recognition.
Yeah, sure. Look, at least we're knocking on the door, you know what I mean? That's our first one. So, long may that last.
Happy days.
Yeah, all right. Let's kick it on. Joining us now on Dishing It Out is an absolute legend. I've had the pleasure of being on his show many's a time, Mario's Roast, when he had it, and your brilliant podcast. Mario Rosenstock, thank you for joining us on Dishing It Out. How are you?
Oh, Gary, delighted to join you on Dishing It Out, and Gareth as well. And I'm a big fan of Gareth's bits on Pat Kenny as well. And it was always great having you on the Sunday Roast, Gary, because you're so bloody opinionated. It's unbelievable.
No, is he?
You know, I need to, you know, like, God, this item, we need somebody with a strong opinion. And you just go, nobody has a strong opinion on this. And they go, yes, he does. His name is Gary O'Hanlon.
Yeah. You ever noticed that Gary has a strong opinion?
He's so quiet.
He's brilliant. He's brilliant. He's brilliant for the opinions. And no, but see, Gary loves, there's certain things that Gary really taps into, like football and stuff. And
yeah, but you know what? You had me on, and quite often I was always paired up with Larissa Nolan, and I had never met that lady like until I did your show for the first time. And ever since then, like, you know, she's a journalist and writes. Absolutely, I just loved her. And Matt Cooper's wife, Eileen, was another one that you had me paired up with a couple of times when I did it. That was a brilliant show, Mario. It probably sickens you that it's no more, but it was absolutely magical to go in there.
It was a lovely
show.
It was a lovely show, and perhaps not enough attention is given to weekend shows these days. Although the aforementioned Anton, who I mentioned before we came on air there, is running a great show at the weekends. But I kind of ran a different type of show, which was a bit more. There was no formula to it. It was more we didn't follow the current affairs, if you like, template.
And people love that, because Sunday mornings and Saturday mornings is nearly always politics and politics heavy and whatnot, which is good. I enjoy politics myself, actually, you know, but there was always that wee mixture of the serious and the humorous on yours. Yeah. And it was just, I mean, whenever you'd be jumping across the table doing Michael D. Higgins. I mean, I could hardly, you could feel the laugh just about to go and catch me breath.
But also Ed is there as well. And Ed used to do, you know, sometimes the story behind the song and everything. We used to devote about 15 minutes to the story behind a famous song, the actual behind the scenes, what led to the song, the recording of the song, the in studios, who was playing on the song, you know, what was it about really? And all that stuff. And there's so many interesting stories of great songs, you know, about that, you know.
Yeah, it was
one very embarrassing moment. I don't know if Ed remembers, but one very embarrassing moment, which I can blame directly on my producer, Patrick. And it was, we had Paul McClune in, who is just such a music aficionado. And Paul wanted to talk about Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, you know? And of course, you know, What's Going On is just, you know, What's Going On. It's just an incredible song.
Classic, yeah.
And an incredible period in music as well. And Marvin Gaye, such an incredible artist. And then the climax of the item is always, okay, let's hear it, Paul. And then we cue the music. And Paul was there. And Paul said, that's great. It's just fucking brilliant. Like, you know, Marvin Gaye, fucking incredible. What's going on? And I went, okay, Paul, let's hear it. And then they hit the music and it was last. Let's get it on. Completely different sentiment. Nothing to do with war or anything, you know. And he nearly hit the roof because Paul is such a, you know, he's great on the music.
Yeah, yeah, he would take it very serious. And that was that your first solo show then, Mario?
Yeah, that was my first solo show. And
then give you the kick up the backside there to start your own podcast which has been amazing.
It was directly after the show got canned. It was directly after the show got canned that Patrick and I said, we've got to continue this into podcasting, because the actual genesis of the show was podcasts. We had noticed that there was a new feel for listening that was out there, which was podcasts. In other words, podcasts had obviously been going for years,
it allow you to do a deeper dive, like podcasts?
That's it. And it was allowing you more almost to go, if this item is running well, we'll just keep going with it. Mm. So keep it going for another 10 minutes because somebody's really into their stride. And the worst thing you can listen to on radio is somebody being in their stride and then them having to go, now we have to go because we've run out of time. And you're always just sick going, what do you mean you've always run out of time?
Yeah.
And, you know, what if you just didn't run out of time for something and you just let, you cancelled another item and just let somebody speak there, you know? So it was really nice. And but we were sold, the radio station was sold to our new owners.
Yeah.
And in the selling of our radio station, I think a kind of a cleaning out of the wardrobe was done, and the weekend was cleaned out, as it were.
Yeah, what a shame, because it was only warming up as well. Like it
was only warming up. It was only a couple of years old. That's right. Yeah,
actually, maybe it'll come back. But look, of course, no. Being Chess, we started Arse About Face or whatever. But going right back to the start in Gift Grub, how did the whole Gift Grub kick off itself? Like, because obviously you were in Glenroe and you did the acting thing, or whatever. We're probably not going to have time to, in true radio fashion, we're not going to have time to do it all. But the Gift Grub thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just grown into its own absolute monstrosity and so successful now. But was it all by design or by accident, or how did it come about?
So I suppose Dishing It Out is the name of your podcast.
Yeah.
And Gift Grub is all about food. And it all started with Bertie Ahern, who is just a 47. Imagine that now. Bertie Ahern was 47 when Gift Grub started.
Jeez, I'm 46 today. Yeah.
And now he's 72.
72. Wow. So he's only a young fella.
Bertie was 47 and he was Taoiseach. And we had this, because Tony Blair was this sort of new rock and roll Taoiseach, or Prime Minister, where, you know, you'd see, you know, the Oasis Gallagher brothers going in and meeting Tony Blair and in Downing Street, and you'd sort of Rule Britannia and all that, Britannia stuff, Cool Britannia, and all that sort of stuff. And Bertie was in his own way trying to copy that over here.
Like,
so when,
guzzling points,
you know,
and fagans.
Yeah, exactly. And talking about Man U and Nicky Bourne and Westlife and me daughter Georgina and Cecilia. And so he'd be trying to, you know, put himself at the same level as Tony. And so I could see this a mile off, this sort of, if you like, fake populism.
Yeah.
And so we said, if Bertie was being really Bertie, what he'd do is he'd love Ian Dempsey, because Ian's really popular, but he'd love to appear next door to Ian Dempsey cooking rashers and sausages and eggs with someone like Ronan Keating. And so that's what it was. It was like Ian would go, and now we go over next door to Gift Grub, where Bertie is with, who are you with, Bertie? How are you? Ian, I'm with Van Morrison, and we're cooking potted herring today. Isn't that right, Van? Fuck off, you copycat. And so we'd have different... you know, whether it was Bruce Springsteen or, you know, someone like that on every day cooking with Bertie. For, if you like, a photo opportunity with Bertie. And then we just ran out of recipes. We ran out of pop stars.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember we were heading towards the end when me and Paul were doing the Bee Gees and they were cooking chicken and fries with Bertie and they were there. Chicken and fries! Chicken and fries! And I knew we were reaching the end when we were coming to that level, you know, and cooking with the Coors and Jim Corr and Andrea Corr, and we couldn't do anything with the course because the girls refused to eat because they just wouldn't eat any food because they'd get fat. Jim Corr was always really hungry then because the girls didn't eat, so they didn't allow him eat. And his catchphrase was, "I'm hungry now, so I am." Because he was never allowed to eat food. So we just ran out of recipes, ran out of pop stars, and we decided broadly to make it The Adventures of Bertie. And so we moved it maybe into the world of Bertie, which would be Dáil Éireann and the Tribunals and Manchester United. And when we moved it into Manchester United, then we met players, people like Roy Keane and Yap Stam, Alex Ferguson and all this. And then it kind of took flight then because once it could go anywhere, we had no problem coming up with sketches every day.
Yeah.
Have you ever spoken? You've obviously spoken to Bertie about him. You must have.
Well, 100%. I mean, I've had many encounters with Bertie, and I suppose my first encounter was through letter, in the sense that after about 3 months of Gift Grub, we got a funny letter through the postbox in Today FM. Now, remember, I say postbox because this was 1999.
Not from and a solicitor, I hope.
No, it was, but it had a harp on it, Gareth.
All right. Okay.
And it was from the government. It was from the Taoiseach's office, and we went, "What the hell is this?" And it was from his senior advisor, and going, "We've been listening to your tapes and we're very entertained by them. Is there any chance you could send us in a few cassette tapes of Gift Grub to listen to?" And we had to send them in cassettes so that Bertie would listen. And they all wanted to hear them. And then the next thing I saw was again a couple of months later, and Bertie was getting out of the car in TV3. And you'd have a voiceover going, "The Taoiseach today came to TV3 to talk about the economy." And all I saw was Bertie getting into the car, and he looked back at them and he went, "See you later, spannerheads," which was an expression from Gift Grub. And I nearly fell off my couch because I was going, he's actually using the expression he heard on the tapes we gave him. So, and see, can you imagine how confident he was at that stage? I mean, there was no get, because Bertie was just like unimpeachable at that stage. You know, he was riding the crest of a wave. So that was when we kind of knew, Jesus, this thing is coming kind of into popular parlance.
Yeah.
And then that happened, that bizarre experience to me, that bizarre experience of seeing somebody talk about you or doing your lines on television happened to me one other time. And it was about 6 years later. I was hungover after a wedding and I was in a hotel and I was watching Sky Gillette Soccer Saturday. And Jeff Stelling was there and he was talking to Jose Mourinho and he went, "So, Jose, when did you first hear the song?" And Jose looked into camera and his beautiful eyebrows and he's like, "Well, I was a big fan of Mario, who I was listening to him on the radio. And Damien Duff brought Mario's song to the dressing room. And so I asked Mario to come over too." But I'm hungover watching this in a hotel going, "Sorry, hold on. Who's Mario? You're talking about Mario. Me? He's talking about me. He's talking about something that happened a couple of weeks ago, you know." And I just couldn't believe what I was watching.
Yeah.
That Mourinho, because normally when you see Mourinho or people like that, they're talking about Ronaldo or somebody special like that. And then they're talking about you. And then he came over to the hotel and he played for us and he performed. So it was just gas, that kind of out of body experience, you know?
Yeah, it must have been. You probably found Mourinho nice then, was he? Like, because obviously he was, I mean, what a talk about a break, really. Not that you needed a break, like, but I mean, Bertie getting behind it. Jose was
The Roy Keane thing happened. That happened the year before the Jose thing as well. Yeah. When Roy Keane asked to meet us.
That
was bizarre, Gareth, as well, because we had done millions of sketches on Roy Keane and we thought the last thing anybody would ever want would be to talk to us. But funnily enough, for the Guide Dogs for the Blind, his people, he reached out to us and we said to his people, do you know who you're dealing with? This is Gift Grub. Like, I'm sure Roy wants nothing to do with this. And they went, no, he specifically asked us if he could sit down with your Roy Keane.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. He's
going
person.
To do Roy Keane with Roy Keane. And they went, yeah, he'd be delighted to do it. And again, that moment when we spend 8 minutes with Roy in the Radisson Hotel and it's just me and Roy and Ian. And he's completely in character as he talks to me as Roy Keane. That's totally and utterly bizarre. Yeah. He has no problem at all speaking to Roy Keane as Roy Keane.
Yeah, but Keane has an unbelievable sense of humor anyway, like apparently, like for anybody.
But he definitely switches it on. Like he just plays the part.
He does. You're right, Gareth. He has, he's really, really aware of TV, entertainment. I mean, he's as quick as a flash.
Reminds
me
of Marco Pierre White. Marco does the restaurant with me, you know, like, and he knows when a show is flat or whatever, and he just drops bombs all the time, like when he needs.
I think now that he's doing those podcasts, you're seeing a little bit more of his genuine personality because he's not, you know, there's little nuances coming out, like where he's nearly laughing at himself, you know.
Yeah.
He just says things that are so outrageous.
He is. And the thing about Keane is, and I think this is what makes him very watchable, apart from the obvious that he has movie star magnetism and that he's movie star charisma, he's actually self-aware. He's aware that of the madness that is Roy Keane, the idiotic sort of nature of the whole thing. And that makes him actually more watchable. Because he's kind of, he gets it. He gets it himself.
Yeah.
Which is rare, right?
Which is what?
It's rare. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
most people, and that makes him harder in a way to take the piss out of, because Keane for me was much easier to take the piss out of when he was just Roy Keane, the warrior, and Roy Keane, the kind of almost the monster. you know, I remember seeing him on a BBC interview with Kevin Kilbane when he had the big long beard and he's promoting his second book, and he's there. Everybody thinks I'm a monster. I'm not a monster. The wide eyes and everything. And but he was easier to take the piss out of when he was like a caricature. Now he's less, because he's much more normal now. So it's harder to take the piss out of him.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Beef. Explore delicious recipes and discover their premium selection on johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Beef, a tradition of Irish dry-aged beef built on 60 years of passion. Learn more at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
So look, being dishing it out, Mario, we always try to get it to food at some stage, right?
Mm.
But who's the cook in your house? Is it yourself or your
100%
wife?
100% my wife. My wife, Blanet, is a really good cook, and yeah. she loves plain food.
You don't dabble at all?
Pardon me? No, I have dabbled, yeah, but she's the kind of woman that goes, none of your dabbling. So so she prefers, you know, that kind of relationship where you go, you know, I'm one of those absolute cliches where I'm the cliched dad who goes, is that okay, kids? Would anybody like Dada's spaghetti bolognese? Thinking that it's really special and that this is the pièce de résistance. No, I'm just a bit of a cliche like that, and I'm almost like the, you know, I'm thinking of flaring up the barbecue kind of dude, and yeah. Then I'm sort of, there's an intervention where some of the family step in and go, don't bother.
Geez, I'd love to live like that, like where you just pretend you're going to make dinner every day, and somebody says, "No, here, I'll do it." Like, so literally, you get cooked for every day, Mario. Brilliant.
I do, but it's more because, and this is being serious, it's more because my wife is just, she loves plain, real food. So she, unadorned. So she loves a really good piece of meat, yeah. and a really good, for example, rice or potatoes and really fresh vegetables.
Oh.
And she would put no sauce on any of that. And so we've got actually used to in the house, not eating much sort of sauce or sort of adornment on the food at all, and just to taste the food for what it is, you know.
Yeah, well, that's a lovely way of eating, actually. So generally, you're buying good ingredients. If you're cooking like that, then the raw product has to be, in our world anyways, when you're not messing around with something, it's either a really fresh piece of fish or a really good aged bit of beef or what have you then. So there's no wet dishes, no stroganoffs, no tikka masalas, no funky monkey gear going on then, no?
There isn't. And, you know, like tonight it's going to be like literally a big fillet of chicken, very mildly seasoned, and boiled potatoes. And I just adore it. I just love the plainness of
it's
it.
It's amazing how everybody eats different, actually. You know, everybody that we have on here, like, and we're always kind of, I mean, that's love. That reminds me of how I would have eaten growing up, actually, the way mommy and daddy would have cooked as well. Like, it was always just meat and veg. I can't get my kids to eat spuds, much to the, you know, disdain. It just drives me crazy. You know what I mean? You give them potatoes and they all go mental. So it's either rice.
Yeah.
It's pasta.
Yeah, absolutely, Gary. But my wife eats very well as well herself, because she would have a sensitive tummy, so she would eat, you know, plain as well to obviate all.
And do you follow that through then? If you, what about eating out then, Mario? Like, are you kind of, does it tie you down, or do you feel that
no? So eating out is a treat. Eating out is obviously a treat, but yeah. like But if we go to, let's say, like, so we went to an Indian the other night, right? Mm. And Blonde will go for like a really like simple big hunk of fish, or something in the Indian. Now I'll go for like a something much more saucier because I can eat that stuff as well.
Yeah.
But she'll go for something even within the Indian, really, really plain.
She knows what to look for. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when she comes home then and she's feeling, oh my God, like, and that feels great. There's no problem with that. No problem with that Indian. You just know that it was a good sort of, you know, piece of fish or whatever, really fresh, and all that sort of stuff. Whereas I'm more of, I'm like a shark. I could eat anything really.
Deadly.
If I had to, but I'm lucky enough that she just puts really good, you know, sort of simple food on the table. And the like something you were just mentioning there, Gary, potatoes.
Yeah.
How underestimated potatoes are in terms of a good boiled potato. I mean, it's only even in the last few years I learned that it was a superfood. Potato is a superfood. And of course it is a superfood because that's what mainly Irish people predominantly lived on until the famine, you know, and it destroyed.
And you don't get them in their jackets just boiled anymore. I mean, Kelly's down in Rosslare do them. I mean, I've been raving about Kelly's for a million years anyways. I go down there every summer. Mm. But when I'm down there, Eugene, the executive chef, like, I mean, they'll be on in the menu and it's just literally boiled potatoes in their jackets, like, and then they'll have butter on the side and parsley.
Oh my God,
and
butter and potatoes is just one of the most beautiful things you can have in the world.
It's probably the one time I'm having dinner and say I've got a steak in the plate, I'll sacrifice half the steak to eat an extra two spuds. Oh. And do you know what I mean? And it's true, like, my wife listens to this, she'll be nodding her head now. She goes, that's
and you see, that
true.
Is the problem with Manchester United right there, Gary. Yeah. You will that's it. That sacrifice is what's wrong with Manchester United. Sacrifice half the steak to eat another two spuds, and that's why they're going to be mid-table this year.
They'll be bottom of the table.
Bottom of the table because they're sacrificing half the steak for two spuds.
Why would you go there? Why would you do that to me?
You should see his face. It's just I know it's touchy.
Yeah, it's been a tough time because Ed here being a Spurs producer extraordinaire, being a sick.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Gary.
A Spurs fan here as well. Jesus, it's been a rough ride. You're a football fan. You're more of a tennis fan.
I'm a massive football fan. I'm a Liverpool fan, but yes, Ed is there as well. So Ed reminds me of my favorite one of my favorite Roy Keane stories about which I'm sure you know, Ed. Oh. My favorite Roy Keane story about Tottenham and Manchester United, and Roy tells it so perfectly. He goes kind of like, yeah, you know, we were obviously, you know, we'd had a hard midweek. I can't think it was Bayern Leverkusen. You know, I think we'd beaten them 3-2. You know, the lads, Yorky, Bexy, Butsy, we were all tired. And, you know, we were playing Tottenham at the weekend. And I think we were playing them in Tottenham. And we were tired, you know, we were knackered. And the gaffer always had a way of coming in and making us feel better. And he just knocked on the door, came in, he went, lads, it's Tottenham. Just and he walked out again.
Yeah. I am editing this out. No, I've heard
because
that.
I always but the way that. The way Alex, remember that story, Gaelic? The way Alex just said, lads, it's Tottenham. And he said, that said it all.
Yeah.
It's just Tottenham. Yeah. That's what
they're grand.
Saying.
They're grand. You know. But Mario, big news going on the road this year. 25 years of the brilliant Gift Grub. Where are you kicking it off?
So I'm kicking it off. So basically 25 years of Gift Grub. It was 1999. And we said 25 years later, May 2024, which was this year, we said, let's have a massive, huge show to celebrate 25 years. In other words, a new show. But a show that would be the best of as well as new material.
Yeah.
And so we're going on nationwide tour. But the real news is that I'm doing a show in the Three Arena, Gary.
Wow.
And Garrett.
Wow.
And which is the biggest show of my life. March 28th, Friday, March 28th in the Three Arena. And so it's just going to be absolutely huge. I've been to the Three Arena many times and you have as well. And what a venue. It's an amazing venue for comedians because it's got great sound. And great visuals as well, big screens. And so it's just going to be amazing. And then it's going to be like Cork, Limerick, Galway, Waterford, and Belfast, and Derry, and Donegal, Gweedore.
Derry. And remember, it's always Derry.
It's always Derry in the forum.
Are tickets out and all for that?
Yeah, tickets are out. And
perfect Christmas presents.
Much to my great relief, tickets are selling well for the...
Sure, of course they are.
For the arena, because I was... Yeah. I kind of had...
Oh, yeah,
I have nightmares about that, just kind of sweaty nightmares, waking up and you walk into this huge arena and there's like maybe 80 people there.
Tumbleweeds.
80 people.
How many
and they're all my friends and they're all trying to encourage me, going, go on, Mario, go on, my son, go on. And I'm just all alone in the three arena.
There's no way that'll happen.
It's going fine.
So how many fits in there? Is it 10,000 or more?
Well, I love it because you're one of the few people that have asked me that technical question and I'll answer it. So if you're doing, if you're a band like Oasis or whatever, or are you two, you would do 14,000.
Yeah.
And about 7,000 of those would be standing. So if you're a comedian like Steve Coogan or Bill Bailey, or Kevin Bridges, or me in my case, there's two configurations. One is 6,000 all seated, and the other is about 7,500, and it's just they open up a slightly other seating at the very back or something. So I would hope for if I can possibly get up to the 6,000, that would be amazing.
Oh,
6,000 seated. I remember I was in I went to see Bill Bailey, and the place was just like absolutely hopping. Wow. And I asked the promoters how many were there, and they went, just about 5,300 here. I went, 5,300. It feels like a Viva Stadium. It's amazing.
Wow.
So you've
done live shows and many of them in big arenas, small arenas, maybe not as big as a three arena. Mm-hmm. But what are the jitters like? Are the butterflies like? Or are there butterflies, Mario? Like, is it very, very different to studio?
Yeah, so every morning when I'm on Gift Grub, I get nervous. Yeah. I'm nervous before I go on the radio. And I've been on the radio for 25 years. And every morning I'm nervous. And I'm nervous about keeping hitting my marks, basically, and getting some comic timing going with Ian and if I'm live and getting all that stuff done. So you're always nervous on live radio. In a stage situation, you've always got what I would call butterflies. Because in fairness, you know that the people have come to see you. So people have paid 35 or 40 quid a ticket and they've come to see you. So really your butterflies are about meeting their expectations, but you're not so nervous because you don't feel like things could go horribly wrong because you were buoyed up by the idea that these people have come to see you.
Of course.
Imagine like, for example, if Ireland are playing Portugal in 2001 in a qualifier in Lansdowne Road and 65,000 Irish people are there. The players would be, I don't know if they'd be nervous, but they'd be just going, let me at them. I can't wait for our fans to get behind us and see what we can do here tonight. So you'd be really excited and have butterflies. I mean, I feel like I tire before I go out. So you work through the nerves during the day. You're nervous during the day, feel sick during the day. You could nearly get sick during the day. But then by 8 o'clock, you're like a jaguar. Yeah. You're ready to go out and kill or be killed.
Wow.
And that adrenaline, I've often talked about this before, but that adrenaline that is sent through your body lasts there for 24, 36 hours.
Yeah.
It's an incredible human physical experience to have that amount of adrenaline pumped into your body. And it takes a long time for it to leave. And that's why you hear stories of, rock stars and people like that losing the head. And because you've so much adrenaline that you can stay up all night and you feel bulletproof. You're just top of the world. And like 3 o'clock in the morning, it's like 10 o'clock in the morning. It's just normal.
Yeah.
So people, it's hard to calm down. It's hard to appear in front of a group of people, come up to their expectations, meet that moment. You can't just go home and calm down.
So
it's
what do you do to calm down? Is it,
Swamp paint.
So what I used to do, Gareth, is what you both would have predicted I would have done years ago, which is just murder myself and just absolutely go carnage, hell for leather, until I just went, this can't continue. You can't continue doing that. Just drinking all night and then hoping to perform the next day. So then I turned into a geek who just comes home and I get like a Napoleon documentary, which lasts about 4 hours on Sky Discovery or something. And you just watch Napoleon for 4 hours and the Battle of Austerlitz, the Battle of San Marino and all this sort of stuff. And you can consume all this enormous amounts of information because your brain is on fire. So basically you're there hoovering up all this information at 3:30 in the morning. And trying to calm down. So that's what I do.
You always seem like a person to me that really goes to the depths of everything that you do when, to mimic somebody or to, you just seem to be very well read and around as you seem to me like somebody that really studies things that you do. Is that fair to say?
Oh, that's kind of you to say that, Gareth. No, yeah. And I do. I believe that when you do something, you're all in.
Yeah, well, it translates for sure.
Absolutely all in. And that you, when you're all in on something, whether it be what you guys do or what I do, you get so much more happiness and fulfillment out of it if you really commit to doing it.
You'd be a Michelin star chef if you were a chef, Mario. You can see the effort you put into your work.
We have this conversation a lot with creatives. Like, we've had artists on here, and you know, anybody that really, and anybody that's creative, you tend to kind of overdo it, is the wrong word, but you have to go, like,
leave nothing to chance.
Yeah, exactly.
I know what you're talking about, and you're talking about that kind of perfectionism as well, and leaving it all out there. But actually, I'm talking about something not different, but related, and that is this. And I see if you guys get this. For many years, I didn't want to know or find out how good I was at something, because I was afraid that if I found out, I'd find out I wasn't really that good. So it's similar to the guy who does the Leaving Cert, and he doesn't try. He's a brainy guy, and he doesn't try really hard. So he gets a B+, knowing that he gets a B+ going, I could have got an A if I really tried, but he didn't get an A because he didn't really try. And he's afraid of finding out.
Yeah.
Would he have gotten A if he had really tried?
He'd rather be able to tell
and
himself he could.
What happened to me in the last 10, maybe 15 years was I decided I'm just going to try. I'm going to give it my everything, and I'm not going to care whether I'm best, second best, third best, fourth best, or fifth best. I'm going to leave everything I have out there and give everything I have to my piece of work that I'm going to do. And I'm not going to care about the result.
Yeah.
That's something that you have to come to terms with yourself.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit of truth. You have to know yourself.
I did that in 2008. It was going to be my last job in Ireland, Viewmount House. And I said, I'm going back to the States. If this place doesn't work, I'm going back. I'd been in Boston 6 years and I had no excuse. A Georgian mansion house, restaurant and converted stables. And it just worked. And it's incredible that the only difference was I said, every single day, I'm going to work as hard and as diligent as is physically possible. And then never stopped, you know. And it's, it changed my whole life. It changed my whole career, that winning restaurant of the year and it all going well and whatnot. So, yeah, it's interesting, you know, where before that you could be telling yourself you're doing well and doing this and doing that and making money. But were you really, you know?
It's very important for you to come to terms with the idea that you've given it your everything and that the result isn't everything. It's more that you've given it your everything. I've heard I've listened to some people talk who are a little older than me even, and they're really good at what they do. And more when I hear them talk, they use the words, the simple words, just do your very best. There is nothing else you can do. But make sure it is your best.
Yeah.
So sleep well the night before. Get a good night's sleep. Be prepared. Work hard. And then perform to your fullest. But don't worry about the result so much. That's out of your hands.
I think when you talk to successful people, the early part of learning is important as well, that you don't do that. You know, like, I think you have to kind of let it go a little bit. And I see it with young chefs, and we've spoken about this before, that, you know, they do things and you look at them and go, why are you doing that? It just makes no sense. But it's only as your career goes on a bit that you start to realise, oh, no, do you know what? You make those mistakes because it's what actually makes you better.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you know, and then you get to a point where you just say, look, I'm just going to go all in all the time and do my best. And I think that's something that comes with age. Well, certainly.
And I guess what I was saying about 5 minutes ago is that there is a lot of, there's a lot of feel good in going all in. You feel really good after you've given everything to something.
Well, that is for sure. Yeah.
And somebody goes, like, I don't know, you know, if there was a top of the pops in regards cooking or whatever, and you've gone home and somebody rings you and go, by the way, your chicken goujons went to number 1 on the charts today. You go, oh, did it? Oh, well, I just went home and I was happy because I thought I did a good job. But you weren't so concerned with hearing that your chicken goujons went to number 1. You just knew that you did a good job. That's all.
True. Well, on that note, Mario, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. Wishing you the very best of luck. I'm sure the Three Arena will be packed and the whole tour across the country. You've been a good pal to me. You've always been kind to me. And thank you for coming on, dishing it out.
Gary, thank you so much for having me. And Gareth, thank you as well. And thanks for those nice words as well.
Yeah, nice one. See you after. So that was a lovely conversation with Mario. And look, I knew there was always going to be some laughs, but it was nice to hear the kind of softer side of him as well. Or,
he's a deep thinker. He's isn't a lovely he? Isn't man.
He? Really yeah. is. Eh? Yeah. And you know, I meant what I said. He always strikes me as the person that really goes to the ends of research. You know, we always.
You know, when you started talking about that, not that it changed his demeanor, but he zoned in on what you were saying.
Yeah, no, for sure.
He appreciated that you were recognizing that he does dig deep for his work, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, he's been on the 6 o'clock show a couple of times and I've been on there and I always see that he really thinks about his answers. But then, as you guys have already spoken about a couple of times, and I know, Gary, you've made reference to this before in conversations that you and I have had, when he flips into character, like, it's literally...
You never see it coming.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Such a skill.
The first time he did it to me, he broke into Michael D. Higgins, right? And I was right across from him and I could still picture it to this day, put his two hands on the table, just identical to the one that we're sat at here now. He goes in the middle of all the mics and the cameras and he's right in my face and he's got that psycho eye on him where he's staring right at you, but he's morphing into Michael D. I'm in stitches laughing and I know I'm going to have to breathe at some point. It's live radio and you're trying to catch your breath under your arm and all sorts. But like he's not for breaking. Like when he gets into that character, he's working and he's working.
Imagine how much, much time and energy and effort and practice goes in because he nails it on.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, he's a good skin. And,
yeah, fair play to him for coming on. Yeah,
really enjoyed that conversation. So, Ed, over to you, my friend. What have we got?
Get ready to conundrum. Here we go. Hey, Gary and Gareth. Loving the crack on the pod, but I have to disagree about pineapple on pizza.
Next.
You are wrong on that.
This is our show's fun.
That's the end of that. Now to my conundrum. Whenever I try to sear scallops, they either stick to the pan or I don't get that golden crust. What's the secret to a perfect sear without overcooking them? Cheers, Judy Dawson in Limerick.
Right. Now, as you all know, I am infatuated with seasoning, okay? It's all about the seasoning, right? Now, one little mistake that you could easily be making with scallops is if you season them too early, or the key is actually not to season them until you seal them, all right? And I'll tell you why. When you salt a scallop, within about 5 to 10 seconds, you'll start see the salt starts to dehydrate and pulls that natural little milk or juice that's in the scallop to the front. If you do that and you wait 10 or 20 seconds and then you add them to your hot pan or whatever, it actually can affect that caramelization seal that you'll get on them. So the best way, cast iron pan, get it really, really hot and use a little bit of vegetable oil initially. There's no flavor in vegetable oil. Has a high flash point and that's what you need. Scallop in and the flattest side of the scallop in. Put it in and don't move it. Don't touch it. Don't do anything. You're probably looking at, on a real good high sizzle, you're looking at about 20 seconds to 25 seconds. You know, chefs will naturally kind of know when to turn it. You really get one good go at that caramelization. Gently move it away with a set of tongs. You'll start seeing that lovely dark brown caramelized ring. Flip them over. Give it about 5-6 seconds on the other side. Immediately in with 2 or 3 decent knobs of butter. Juice of about half a lemon. Base for about 20 seconds. And that's the scallop cook. You want to take them off when they're just over medium. They've just gone over what you would imagine is halfway. While they're still then sitting on the plate or sitting a little bit of kitchen paper, a little fine, even distribution of fine sea salt right over the top of them and then serve them whatever way you're going to go. But key thing, no seasoning before. On the pan, don't move them, don't mess around with them. Make sure you use vegetable oil, not butter at the start, and you should be golden.
Julie, that is how you answer a question. Fair play. Okay, we're going to Leitrim next. Hi, Gareth and Gary. I'm planning to make a beef Wellington for a special occasion, but I'm worried about getting the pastry just right. How do I keep it flaky without the filling making it soggy? Thanks, Emil, and love the pod. Jack and Leitrim.
Beef Wellington is, I know, Gary, you used to do them for functions, don't you?
Yeah.
And I've worked in many properties where we do them as well. Really, the key is you have to make a thing called a duck cell. So first of all, you need beef fillet. And we all know where we're going to send you to buy your beef fillet. So you're going to head over to John Stone and they'll give you a nice piece of centre cut beef fillet. You can use a Chateaubriand, which is the head, but there's a little bit of sinew in there that I would say probably stay away from. So you need a bit of centre cut beef fillet. Then you're going to make a thing called a duck cell, which is basically a mushroom pate. And all that is button mushrooms. You can use some wild mushrooms as well, really finely chopped. And you're going to cook them in a hot pan till there's no water. So when you fry them off in a little bit of vegetable oil with some shallots and some thyme and some garlic, you just keep cooking it almost till it starts sticking to the pan. So what you're doing is you're removing all the moisture. Then what you're going to have to do is make a crepe or a really thin pancake. And the crepe and the mushroom duck cell is what soaks up any of the juice that comes out of the fillet while cooking. And then the last thing that you need is a puff pastry. And at home,
buy that.
I would be saying buy a shop bought. Just keep your eye out for all butter. So some of the puff pastries that you can buy in the supermarket is made with fat or lard. And there's not as much flavour in there. So look for an all butter puff pastry. And then it's assembly. So you need cling film on your bench. Then you're going to put down your puff pastry. Then you're going to put down your crepes on that. And then you're going to do a little layer of your duck cell. And then you put your seared beef fillet and you roll it all up. And because you put the cling film down, you just use the cling film to make this barrel. Pop it into the fridge, leave it in there for a couple of hours to let it set. Take it out onto a baking tray, brushed really well with egg yolk as an egg wash. And then it's baked in the oven, normally a 220 degree oven for, you know, really, if you take it out of the fridge half an hour before you're going to cook it, you're going to cook it for 18 to 20 minutes at 220. Then you lower your oven down to 180 and give it another 10 or 12 minutes. Take it out and then carve it. Let it rest, then carve it. And really, if you're going for medium rare, you're going to rest it for about another, I don't know, 6 or 8 minutes before you carve it. And then that's a perfect, it's a tricky thing to do.
I've never had it, you know.
You've never eaten a beef wellington? It's one of the most delicious things you'll ever eat. Mm. But it does take a good bit of skill to explain how to make. I mean, I've explained how to make it, but go and watch a couple of the YouTube videos because it's a tricky thing to do. I think Marco has a really good one up.
I'm not sure. Ramsay's very famous.
Yeah, Ramsay, exactly.
As well, yeah.
But it's a tough thing to do.
And we make a wonderful one in the KA Club.
It's a labour of love. Yeah,
it takes a lot of time, a lot of love, man.
It looks phenomenal.
Delicious. But again, you know, I've told you the ingredients that go into it, then there's a little bit of a skill in the method, but it really is a delicious thing to eat. Yeah.
And the key thing about the John Stone beef and that, when you have, like, not many fillets are dry aged a bit. I mean, the fillet would only really hang for like a week or 10 days, and then anatomically, like, it's then butchered off. It comes off from behind the rib cage and the back of the sirloin, which takes another 2 or 3 weeks hanging. But the fillet doesn't necessarily need it. But the bit of aging that it gets at John Stone, like, it's whatever moisture is there, like, you're helping get it out. Real good quality beef, so there's none of that steam and nonsense coming out of it, and that's all going to help the end product. You buy the right ingredients, you get the right results.
Brilliant. Galway next. A question that I've been dying to ask. I get mercilessly teased by my husband because I won't go to a restaurant. Oh, okay, this is good. I won't go to a restaurant until I've checked out their menu online beforehand. He refuses as he enjoys a sense of expectation. Am I mad, or is this something that top chefs do too? A marriage depends on this answer, so no pressure. Alice in Galway. Do you look at the menus before you head to a restaurant?
No, I don't. I just go to where I know it's going to be good. But I do know, one of our favourite food critics and former guest of the pod, Gillian Nealis, who's editor of Food and Wine and I think editor,
just the editor of the
Business Post itself as well. But Gillian despises a restaurant not having its menus online. You know what I mean? It really drives her
I mean, they have to be there. And the reason why they're there is because people want to see them.
Yeah, the only thing I would have now, we have all our menus in the K Club online, but like, we'll note that it's a sample menu in case you're ever caught out with a mid-season change or whatever it'll be. But it would still give you a very good overview of what's on, you know what I mean? And it is updated all the time. I don't see it being a problem. Like, it's nice that it's there if somebody wants to take a wee look at it and see. I generally tend to know all about the chef or the restaurant that I'm going to. I trust that.
But if you don't know, say you're overseas, or, you know, I kind of agree. I like to open up that menu book.
Yeah.
And to get the surprise.
And you go, ooh.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's all about
it wouldn't be a deal breaker for me. Yeah.
I'm eating out. I'm already in a good spot. I'm not cooking. I'm off. I'm guzzling good gear.
I've often eaten in restaurants where I never even looked at a menu. So, like, it's not unusual, especially in a high-end restaurant, that it's a surprise menu, like, and the course has just come out.
Degustation,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, like,
give me whatever you want.
A surprise degustation menu is not unusual. But I do understand that, especially if you're going out with guests and some of them may have some dietary requirements, being able to see the menu. So, to answer that lady's question, the both of you are right.
Ooh.
So you're welcome. Your marriage is still alive.
Did we say the
marriage
there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Best of luck to you, Alison Galway. Your husband's right. Anyway, thank you all so much for sending in your conundrums. Keep them coming in, please, at food@goaloudnow.com.
So that's another week done and dusted. And we're really on the home straight now. I think we've only a couple of more shows to record, Gary, do we?
I think we have two left on season
four. Yeah, I must do up the old numbers, but we're flying.
Yeah, yeah. Two left there. This one was good. We rocked on through it rightly.
So look, thanks as always to our key sponsor, Johnstone Beef. And Gary's going to give you this is a running joke now. Gary's going to give you the discount code. Gary, what's the discount code?
JSBDO.
So it's Johnstone Beef dishing it out, broke down into letters. So make sure if you're going over to the lads and you're buying the roast boxes or the barbecue boxes, I don't know much barbecuing is going to be going on now, but the weather has definitely changed, hasn't it? So maybe your cooking will have changed a little bit.
All year though, you're probably the same, right?
Same, yeah, but my cooking style definitely changes at this time of year. I do a lot more braising and slow cooking there, and I definitely do a lot more roasting. So head on over there, and look, thanks as always for tuning in. Share the love, keep an eye out for the as we said, aren't they getting a nomination now for an award? So keep an eye out for the
last. We better win it now. It'll be bad news.
Exactly.
Won't we?
And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks as always.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins. A Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by Johnstone Fine Foods. Get premium Irish dry aged beef delivered to your home at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.